Hey, I'm Ben with the Court of Nerds. Sometimes I say things with my mouth and write things with my fingers. You can find us on Facebook. We're the Court of Nerds. On Twitter, @court_of_nerds. And our website, thecourtofnerds.com.
Hello and welcome to all you fans of fantasy. I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerds with a very special segment I'm calling A Conversation with Mr. Sledge. Today, I'm interviewing one of my personal favorite fantasy writers. He has written a Dungeons & Dragons books, he has written Star Wars books, he has crafted his own fantasy worlds, he's a New York Times best-selling author, and he graduated from the U of M Law School. Oh, and by the way, he has a book coming out this Tuesday. Mr. Paul S. Kemp. Paul, thank you so much for being on our podcast. Did I leave anything
Kevin,
out?
You left nothing at all out. Kevin, thank you very much for having me. I'm very pleased to be here.
Excellent, excellent. And so I wanted to ask you, I mean, this all came about because you saw a little Man Crush Monday post that we threw up on our website. And I was surprised that, you know, one of my, you know, favorite writers actually, you know, saw it. And then I immediately fired off an email to you saying, hey, would you like to come on the show? That wasn't too creepy, was it?
That was not creepy at all. In fact, that's exactly why I do that stuff. You know, engaging with readers and podcasters, and that's really it's among the funnest parts of the gig.
Great, great, great. So I'd like to actually talk to you a little bit of your start in fantasy and sci-fi writing. When did you realize you wanted to write fantasy and sci-fi? What drew you to those genres, and who influenced you?
Well, I guess I realized I wanted to write fantasy when I realized that I hated law school. It's funny, I actually liked the practice of law, but man, law school was just a slog. It probably goes back before that a bit, though. I think, you know, I had a friend of mine in fifth grade who introduced me to this weird thing called Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And I started playing that then and absolutely loved it. And the same friend introduced me to Fritz Leiber's Fafhrd and the Grey Mouser stuff. He had a whole series of Doc Savage novels, too. I don't know if you know those.
Oh,
they're very pulpy, action-oriented Man of Bronze stuff. And, you know, I started reading that. Now, this was post having first read The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings at the behest of my fifth-grade teacher, Mr. Murphy. So Mr. Murphy, I suppose, I kind of owe my sort of baptism by fire in fantasy. And then my buddy Bob, who introduced me to some different kind of fantasy, you know, Moorcock and Leiber and Brackett. And so, you know, after I got into that, I read fantasy all through junior high and high school, still do today, although a bit less so today. And, you know, at some point I started playing around with writing. I ran a very long-term Dungeons and Dragons campaign. In fact, I game with the same guys for, geez, must have been 20, 25 years.
Ooh.
And I would take to sort of writing their adventures in narrative form. So I got a little bit of the bug and a little bit, I scratched the itch a little bit there. But when I finally got into law school, which is really an odd time given the stress of that, to try to start a second career,
yeah,
I started to engage more fully with the writing. And at the time, you know, the market was a little bit different then. Wizards of the Coast had an open call for a new series that they were starting, and they wanted to get at least a couple of new writers in the series. So I pitched at that point what would later become my Erebus Kale story. So Kale is kind of posing as a butler, but he's really a former assassin and thieves and letters guy, forger, and so forth. And they really like that. And everything kind of took off from there in terms of my professional career. The Kale books were very, very popular for Wizards of the Coast. That led to Star Wars opportunities, and throughout all of that, I've worked on my own worlds and characters as well, which ultimately culminated in the Eagle and Nyx series.
Excellent. And, you know, I love the shout out to your fifth grade teacher, too. Teachers are a very important influence in all of our lives, and, you know, good recognition for them.
Absolutely.
I want to say, one of the things with you, when I found you in grad school when I was working on my master's in history. And of course, the same thing when you're reading like 10 books a day, you were the 11th book. You know, it was what I read at like 3 o'clock in the morning to come down. And it's
That's
weird.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it's weird to see like this roguish assassin of Erebus, you know, being that for me. And you having kind of the same experience.
Yeah, really, those are some dark books to be reading at 3 in the morning after plowing through your materials, brother.
And it's, honestly, though, it's still some of my favorite of everything that took place in Abertorial. And, like, how you pulled everything together, it was really mind-blowing to me at the time, and I knew I kind of wanted to get more involved in fantasy or even in gaming, hence my career at Games Workshop. But
oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, off topic, you know, that was. But I'd like to talk to you about your roguish characters like Erebus and Nyx. They operate in this kind of moral gray area, like both of them do. They both seem to have like an altruistic heart. Is there any time kind of particular reason why you write these kind of characters, and does your background in law, you know, kind of affect that?
Yeah, you know, because when you're a lawyer, you kind of secretly hate yourself, but you like to think that you're doing good. It's the same as with you guys. No, I mean, I think, you know, for me, fantasy, and I've said this before, but fantasy is this great venue for exploring moral dilemmas.
Yeah.
Now, all literature does that to some degree, but fantasy is really well suited to it because some of the tropes of fantasy suit themselves very well to kind of things that are sort of purely evil and purely good. And that doesn't work, obviously, in the context of normal literary fiction, or even generally in the context of sci-fi. So, you know, sci-fi is kind of the literature of ideas. It's great for exploring the implications of huge ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy, I think, is great for exploring the implications of sort of moral choices that the protagonists make in the context of this sometimes very concrete moral environment. So for me, you know, I really like doing that and putting my characters through that kind of moral ringer. And the best characters I've found, and some of this is probably just my own kind of leanings also, but the best characters I've found tend to be ones who have some relationship to faith, but are also sort of in this kind of moral twilight where they're faced with these awful choices all the time. And do they do these things that cost them little bits of their soul in exchange for the greater good and that kind of thing? And of course, Erebus really struggles with those kinds of questions. Those books are pretty dark and very grim. When I think of Nyx, I think more of a character who the setting has a grittiness and a grimness to it, but I often feel like the Egil and the Nyx books are a bit more optimistic than the Kale books. The Kale books feel destined for a tragedy.
Yeah.
The Egil and Nyx books to me feel a bit more optimistic as their story unfolds. Now, all that said, you know, Egil, his character, this priest of a dead god, congregation of one, you know, he feels a bit more Kale-like to me. He's kind of philosophical about life and about faith and about the interaction of man with faith and the kind of moral choices that he and Nyx have to face all the time. I think Nyx likes to kind of superficially bounce along the moral choices and try not to square up to them very well. He sort of deflects and deflects and deflects, whereas Egil faces them pretty squarely. And deals with the consequences, but that makes him a much more taciturn kind of grim character than Nyx is.
And that actually came through very well for me while reading all of these books, which are great reads, by the way, and it's very hard to put down. You know, if you sleep next to the wife with a light on and stuff like that at about, you know, that 2 a.m. and stuff, like, all right, it's time to go to sleep. It's that kind of reading and stuff for me.
Great to hear.
Yeah, like Edgel, great point, deterministic and stuff like that, how should I say, more optimistic. He has a very tragic past, something that's only hinted at in your previous works. Am I going to be spoiling anything if I ask the question in A Conversation of Blood? Are we going to get some more of his backstory about his wife and his daughter?
We do get some, but sort of the detailed exploration of it is something I want to hold off for kind of a future novel.
Right.
You know, with Eggle, it is, though, I mean, ultimately I owe that to the readers. I mean, they need to have the payoff to that storyline. But you know, it plainly is the event that has shaped the man that he is today in a way that nothing else has. I mean, he really has two things. He has the loss of his wife and daughter, and he has his friendship with Nick. So these are the sort of the two guiding stars of his character. And so, yeah, eventually, I mean, you get the friendship with Nick throughout all of the books. You get their involved relationship, but eventually, yeah, I'll explore that. But it's not something I get into in detail in a conversation of blood.
Oh, and that I was wondering if you were going to, you know, keep it all a mystery, because it was one of those things that always kept me reading and stuff, too. It's like, what is his, you know, what is his background? What is it? Because he seems so mysterious. And when he's had his relationship beginning to open up with, like, the Mind Mage sisters and the younger sister and stuff like that, you really got to see, like, kind of a bit of a broken man. And how I see Nyx was what was keeping him around. I mean, am I fair to say that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, for each of them, they're both damaged in their way. And for each of them, their friendship and reliance on the other is the thing that holds them together. But even despite that, they need something else. I mean, the two of them, you know, when we find them in a conversation in blood, at the beginning of the story, I mean, Eggle is down in a way that we haven't seen before. And not even Nyx can just pull him out as easily as he might have with just some cutting word or good-natured insult. Instead, you know, what he realizes is that these two, both of them, have a very hard time sitting still, because sitting still means thinking about things, and thinking about things gets hard for men who have seen what these two have seen. So
right.
Now they finally just realize, and their friend Tesha also mentions to them, you just need to go do something. You know, I mean, you two are these wanderlust, sort of reckless, wild souls, and sitting around in a tavern is not going to get it done for the two of you. Go find something to do, assholes, basically.
Right. Sitting around in the slick tunnel, they thought they wanted to be a tavern / brothel owners, but does it turn out that they can't ever leave the life that they, you know, chose for themselves?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these are two guys just looking for meaning, so they bounce from one thing to another. But at the end of the day, where they find the most meaning is in their relationship with one another and the things that they do.
So, I mean, we've talked about Eggle and Nyx quite a bit, but we haven't really talked about the world in which they inhabit. Could you kind of give our listeners kind of a broad brushstroke of what this world is like? You know, what kind of characters, what kind of beings inhabit this world?
Well, so Ellarth at this point is a world, at least as far as the readers of the books up to this point have seen, where it is the environment in which Eggle and Nyx move is this kind of dirty, grimy, gritty city that is built on the bones of a previous city, and, you know, out of which jut these sort of weird, mysterious architectural wonders from a previous civilization. And history to them is, in some ways, this kind of it's a black box in the sense that there's a lot of speculation about the previous civilization, and there are a lot of rumors about it, but they're self-contradictory, and no one really knows precisely what. But everybody's so scrabbling to survive and they're fallen by and large that you know, there's not an immense interest in the past, there's an interest in today. Magic in the world is something that I try to keep very non-systematized and mysterious. So, you know, in some epic fantasies today, and it's great, but, you know, you'll get a very kind of systematized, orderly system of magic where there are a set series of rules and there are kinds of things that you do cause these kinds of consequences. In Ellarth, magic is very, very different from that, and it can be wild and unpredictable, and the way in which it is used, tapped, manipulated by various practitioners is widely varied. So in that sense, it's in the tradition of something like the Thieves' World anthologies or Howard's Conan series and so forth. And that's where these guys are. And, you know, throughout the books, we learn a bit more about the world's past, and some mysteries are answered, some questions are answered, and others are raised, and the events of a conversation in blood, I think, are some of the most interesting that have been raised and at least partially answered so far in the series.
Excellent. Like, I'm looking forward to my book should arrive tomorrow, and so,
you know,
I'll of course, when this podcast goes up, I'll of course probably be halfway through it. As I stated, before, our listeners should go and search you out. Where would they find you? What websites? What social media are you on?
So I'm in all the places. I'm on Facebook as Paul S. Kemp. Okay. I'm on Twitter as at Paul S. Kemp. I have my website is paulskemp.com. I tend to use that mostly for sort of big announcements and things. Mm-hmm. I interact with readers and other folks on Facebook and Twitter a lot. So if you really want to find me and want to chat and have some fun, those are the places to do that.
Excellent. And Conversation in Blood comes out tomorrow, so January 24th, correct?
Indeed it does.
All right. Paul, this has been great. Thank you for coming on to the courtofnerds.com. And I look forward to seeing more books and stuff from you in the future.
This is Paul S. Kemp, creator of Eggo and Nix, and I am close, personal, sexy time friends with the Court of Nerds.